They pass again as the power comes through and the magic picks up speed, but they are bad moments while they last. Usually we swing over them on the momentum of the ritual, but I had not yet come to the point when I could use ritual with Malcolm, and I had to make my transitions in cold blood. However, I survived. The elements rage, the fiend voices that rave shall dwindle, shall blend, shall cease. Shall become first a peace after pain, then a light. It is claimed by initiates that Browning was one of us, and on the evidence of those lines I believe it, for I have passed through that gate so often. I have passed out by the path of fear so often that I have almost ceased to fear it. I know it will be unpleasant, but I know it will be brief. The shadows began to close round me as I stood at the altar in my robes, but I set my teeth and went to fetch Malcolm. I do not mind when I am alone. It is when I am responsible for others that I get this fear. But I am the sacrifice. It is to that thought I cling. If anything goes wrong, I am first in the line of fire. Malcolm came eagerly in answer to my summons. He had passed through his gate of fear the previous day and the fascination of the unseen was upon him. He followed me up the dark stair, and again I lifted the curtain for him, both literally and metaphorically, and we stood together upon the floor of Isis. "Ayo, do I get on the couch?" he asks in a low voice. "Ayo, no," I replied. "Ayo, you stand at the upright altar today." I placed him facing the mirror at the side of Earth, and took my place opposite him with the mirror behind me. The hanging lamp shed a pyramid of shadow over us, and in the shadow the lamp upon the altar threw a cone of light upwards, bringing out in strong relief Malcolm's heavy jaw and beetling brows. His eyes were on my face, and I knew from the look in them that my features had changed even as his had in that revealing light. His was the face of the butchering priest. What mine was I could only guess from his startled, reverent eyes. Malcolm's reaction helped to restore to me my sense of reality. The gears engaged and the magic began. I was not fully the priestess yet, however. I was still driving myself on willpower. I intended to work Malcolm up to the pitch of emotional intensity when he would touch those reserves of energy that give the maniac his strength and the artist his frenzy of creation. Then there would come off from him the magnetism that is used in magic and without which magic is not. It was not difficult to do, for I could take him along the line of his natural cleavage, his feeling for me and his memories of his past lives, but to hold him steady on the crest of the wave as it rose to breaking, and cross the bar between the planes on a great emotional crisis was entirely a matter of nerve and concentration, and if either failed, that was the end of Malcolm. It would not kill him, but if the fuse blows at that tension, the man is a burnt-out cinder thereafter. Then the work done, I had to bring him back to normal, stepping down the power and stepping it down, linking up the dissociated ends of consciousness so that there should be no gaps, easing him back into his body so quietly, so steadily, that no sign of the tension should show, and restoring him finally to perfect normality, ready to take up his day's work. Hic labor, hoc opus, and the more skillfully one does it, the less people realize what has been done. I laid my hands on the altar and bid Malcolm copy me in all I did. The broad, perfectly proportioned hands with their slightly spatulate fingers, beautiful in their strength and sensitiveness, appeared in the circle of light. My hands are curious, they are not a pair, one is a man's hand, and one is a woman's. And on them I had the magnetized rings that give power. On the black velvet of the altar cloth, within the small circle of light thrown by the sacred lamp, lay the two pairs of hands, the virile, corded, muscular hands of Malcolm, and my smooth white woman's hands with their pink-stained nails. They were laid there in dedication and sacrifice. There is a peculiar sense of helplessness when the hands are laid on the altar. One is so completely at the mercy of the powers one invokes, so completely negative, opening one's soul to them. Then, as the power comes in, one shares in it and becomes powerful once more. I felt the power beginning to rise, and called up my reserves from the Earth center and brought them to their focus in the third eye, the concealed astral eye, that is in the center of the forehead, and felt the twisting sensation as it began to stir. I pinned Malcolm with my eyes as a snake pins a bird, for one has to be ruthless in magic, and then raised my hands and threw the power at him, threw it in hard, threw it in crushingly, because I had to break down his inhibitions and reach the deeper levels. I saw him quiver as he felt the force, but his eyes met mine unwaveringly and his hands came up opposite mine, palm parallel to palm, a foot apart. He could not bend back his wrists as I did, but the hands were absolutely steady and the arms behind them like bars of steel. Malcolm was a man of power, steady as a rock, single-pointed, unreservedly dedicated. I could not have asked for a better man to work with. I had to magnetize Malcolm and make him see me as the priestess, so I began the age-old chant that declared my power. I am she who ere the earth was formed was Rhea, Bina, Sh. I am that soundless, boundless, bitter sea out of whose deeps life wells eternally. Astarte, Aphrodite, Ashtrith, giver of life and bringer in of death, Hera in heaven, on earth Persephone, Diana of the ways and Hecate, all these am I and they are seen in me. The hour of the high full moon draws near, I hear the invoking words, hear and appear Shaddai El Chai and Rhea, Bina, Ch. I come unto the priest who calleth me as I chanted and vibrated the words. I moved my arms in the signs that correspond, and Malcolm, unable to follow these, dropped his hands to his sides and stood still. I made the signs of space and sea and inner earth, of hailing Aphrodite and chaste Diana of the moon, and finally the bat wings of Hecate, for unless one can handle the dark aspect of a force, one cannot handle the bright, and in the end I gave Malcolm the full salute of a priest, and I think he knew it. We faced each other, priest and priestess. Malcolm had to stand up to the forces as best he could, I might not temper them to him any longer. Then began the voice that is not my voice, the most tremendous form of mediumship there is, the cosmic mediumship that brings through the gods. I am the veiled Isis of the shadows of the sanctuary. I am she that moveth as a shadow behind the tides of death and birth. I am she that cometh forth by night and no man seeth my face. I am older than time and forgotten of the gods. No man may look upon my face and live, for in the hour he parteth my veil, he dieth. A. Malcolm looked into the eyes of Isis. Ao, am quite willing to die, Ao, he said. Ao, kneel down. Ao, there are two deaths by which men die, the greater and the lesser. The death of the body and the death of initiation, and of these two, the death of the body is the lesser. The man who looks upon the face of Isis dies, for the goddess takes him. They that die thus go by the path of the wellhead that is beside the white cypress. A. Unbidden, Malcolm folded his arms on the altar and laid his head on them. Ao, he that would die to the birth, let him look upon the face of the goddess in this mystery. Be ye far from us, O ye profane, for one goes by the path that leads to the wellhead that is beside the white cypress. A. Malcolm seemed asleep, and the intoning voice went on, O Isis veiled and Rhea, Bina, lead us to the well of memory, the wellhead where the pale white cypress grows, by secret twilight paths that no man knows, the shadowy path dividing into three, Diana of the ways and Hecate, Selene of the moon, Persephone. The high full moon in the mid-heavens shines clear, O hear the invoking words, hear and appear. Shaddai El Chai and Rhea, Bina, the room had disappeared and I was standing in a vast underground cave with dark water at my feet. Before me, Malcolm knelt with bowed head and raised arms, but the altar no longer being there, the raised arms seemed to express supplication. I myself was no longer robed in the dull black of velvet that fits all the negative forces, but in soft, shimmering filmy indigo, blue and purple. Upon my head was the horn moon, and about my hips the starry girdle of the constellations, and I knew that I was Isis in her underworld aspect, whom the Greeks called Persephone, for all the goddesses are one goddess, personified under different modes. There was nothing of the human left about me. I was vast as the universe, my head among the stars, my feet on the curve of the earth as it swung under me in its orbit. Around me, in translucent space, stood the stars, rank upon rank, and I was of their company. beneath me, very far beneath me, all nature lay spread like a green patterned carpet. Alone on the globe that soared through space I stood, with the kneeling man before me, and there were none others in all creation save he and I, the all-woman, and he archetypal man, and the whole of the manifested universe was summed up in the relationship between us. I was in my calm, negative, underworld aspect as queen of the dead, ruler of the kingdoms of sleep. In death men come to me across the dark river, and I am the keeper of their souls until the dawn. But there is also a death in life, and this likewise leadeth unto rebirth, for there is a turning within of the soul whereby men come to Persephone. I am also the great deep, whence life arose, to which all shall return at the end of innate broken bar on. Herein do we bathe in sleep, sinking back into the primordial deep, returning to things forgotten before time was, and the soul is renewed, touching the great mother. Whoso cannot return to the primordial hath no roots in life, they are the living dead who are orphaned of the great mother. I was that great one in her most benign aspect, tranquil, brooding, as a woman broods over her unborn child. I was the giver of sleep, blessing the weary man before me with my great gift. He had come back to me to be a child again, as an overwrought man always does, as he needs must do if he is to renew his strength to battle with life, for unless a woman can brood him as I brooded Malcolm that night, his nerves will wear bare of insulation as a frayed wire. It is only when for love's sake she can make him as the unborn that he renews his strength, for to him she is the soul of earth wherein are his deepest roots. The more dynamic the man, the more dependent is he upon his earth contacts in his woman. These are not the contacts of passion, they are older, more primal than that. They go back to the days when humanity was as yet unborn from the earth soul. I was his anima, his underworld contact, his link with most ancient earth and things primordial wherein are the roots of strength. Through me he could touch them as he was powerless to do alone, for man is of the sun and stars and fire, but woman is of dark space and dark earth and dark, primordial water. As that man who was all men knelt before me, I gazed upon him, and my own nature rose within me like a tide with the divine compassion of the all-woman, and I stretched my arms with their wing-like draperies over him and blessed him, and the shimmering folds of blue and purple clothes drowned him like a cloak and I drew him down to my kingdom. Sink down, sink down, sink deeper and sink deep, into eternal and primordial sleep. Sink down, forget, be still and draw apart into the inner earth's most secret heart. Drink of the waters of Persephone, the secret well beside the sacred tree. As I sang I wove about him with my draperies, and all became dark and still and warm as the womb of time, and he became as the unborn in their prenatal sleep. So was he rested. And as his rest deepened, he was vitalized. Then at that deepest level, I fed his soul. Deliberately, knowing full well there must be repercussions in life and that I must pay, but knowing also that he would not have the strength to do that which I required of him if I did otherwise, I made the magnetic link between us by which power should flow, the power of woman, not the bright radiance of Aphrodite, but the dark, brooding warmth of the womb of great Isis who is nature. She is the giver of the strength of which in her Aphrodite aspect she is the caller forth. Malcolm would be dependent on me from henceforth, but then, if the truth were known, he was dependent on me already, for he had known me in my Persephone aspect in his sleep when he had dreamt that he lay with his head on a woman's shoulder. And so, accepting the inevitable, I sang to him, I am that secret queen, Persephone, all tides are mine, and answer unto me, tides of the airs, tides of the inner earth, the secret silent tides of death and birth, tides of men's souls, and dreams, and destiny Isis veiled and rear, Bina, then in my vision I drew him to me as he knelt so that his head rested against my breast, and gave him peace. The power began to ebb. The outlines of the room came up waveringly through the moon mist as if through deep, dark water, and I began to feel my human personality again. Malcolm still knelt before me at the altar and seemed to be asleep. I could see his graying red hair in the dim circle of light. I could see one broad hand lying flaccid on the black velvet. The other I could not see, for his cheek rested on it as he slept. I have never seen any being so utterly relaxed, and yet he knelt upright at the altar, held there by his own unconscious will. I had to bring that man back, and he had a long way to come. Slowly, gently, for he must not come back too fast, I reversed the strokings with which I had soothed him to sleep, strokings that never touched him, and were all the more powerful on that account. He raised his head and looked at me dazedly. Unsteadily he got to his feet, holding on by the altar. "Ayo, where am I?" "Ayo," he said. "Ayo, you are back here with me," I said. "I, in my home, where you are happy. Ayo, yes, I am always happy there," "Ayo," he replied mechanically, for his mind was not yet fully back with him. "Ayo, now I am going to cut the power and bring all back to normal. Hold out your hands, hold them thus." I stretched forth mine, bent back at the wrists, and brought my flat palms against his, and as I did so the power broke. It snapped back like a piece of elastic, and we were back to normal, Malcolm and I, staring at each other. "Ayo, my God," I said, Malcolm, and passed his hand over his forehead and shook the sweat off it in a shower of drops. "Ayo, how do you feel?" I said. "I. Ayo, feel? I feel as if I'd had 10 Turkish baths one after the other. I'm one mass of sweat. What have you done to me? Let's sit down on something." A he reeled unsteadily to the couch and dropped down on it. His hand went up to his collar. "I'm going to take this off. I don't care what I look like." A off came the sodden rag and was thrown on the floor. Even the ends of his tie were dark with moisture. "Ayo, my lord," I said, Malcolm. "Ayo, phew." He mopped his face and neck till the handkerchief joined his collar on the floor. "I'm going to borrow a bath towel off you when we get downstairs," he said. "Ayo, now you see why we work in robes, and strip beneath the robe?" I said. "Ayo, my lord, I should think I do. No suit would stand this sort of treatment very often. May I take my coat off?" I handed him a small cloth I kept up there for cleaning the ritual instruments, and entirely unself-conscious and oblivious of me, for he was not yet fully back in his body, he sat there on the black altar of sacrifice mopping his broad chest, looking exactly as if he had been taking part in a fight. I opened a cupboard in the wall, took out a bottle, and poured its contents into a long glass. "Ayo, drink that." I said. "Ayo, what is it?" I said, he, eyeing it suspiciously, for he was a strict teetotaler. "Ayo, apple juice," said I. "Ayo, fermented. Ayo, alcohol is best left alone on occasions like this. Ayo, it's best left alone on most occasions, in my opinion," I said, Malcolm. "Ayo, at any rate, it's best left alone by me." The apple juice, however, went down in one continuous stream. "Ayo, replacements," I said, Malcolm. "Ayo, my lord, I needed that." The intake of fluid rapidly restored him to normal, and he began to be aware of the appearance he was presenting. "Ayo, my dear lady," he began, and catching sight of his bare chest, hastily buttoned his shirt. He recovered his collar from the floor, considered it, shook his head sadly, and thrust it into his trouser pocket. "Ayo, can't tidy up. Can't apologize, can't do anything. What actually happened? I went to sleep, didn't I?" "Ayo, you went sound asleep. Did you dream?" "Ayo, think I must have. There seem to be vague shadows of dreams floating about still. I only hope I behaved with a reasonable amount of discretion." "Ayo, you never moved." "That's a comfort. I suppose you know what you're about. God help you if you don't. I'm no lightweight." "Ayo, if you've sufficiently revived, shall we go downstairs?" "Ayo, oh yes, I'm reviving nicely." He rose. "Ayo, lord, I'm unsteady on my feet. I don't seem to know where they are. By gum, now I know how the hysterical paralytics feel." He dropped back on the couch and tested his own knee jerks. "Ayo, that's all right," he said with a sigh of relief. He rose cautiously and made his way to the door. Hey, I'm going first down these stairs, if you don't mind. I'm not going to risk falling on top of you. Have the enforced activity, however, rapidly re-coordinated him, and by the time he reached the bottom of the flight he was back to normal. Ayo, my lord, you do that to me often, and you'll have a corpse to bury. Ay, he said. Ayo, not in the least, ay, said I. Ayo, it will do you all the good in the world. Would you like to have a wash? Ayo'd like to have a bath, I said he. I dispatched him to the bathroom, armed with my largest bath towel, and in due course he reappeared, pink as a cherub, clad in his own trousers as to his lower half, but having borrowed my bathrobe for his upper half. Ayo, next time I come to see you I shall bring a spare shirt, ay, he said. I knew he would be hungry, and had prepared a good meal, but I had not bargained for the wolf I found myself entertaining. Malcolm, behind his grim exterior, was simply a big schoolboy. What his learned colleagues made of him, I could not imagine, nor how even his brains had taken him to the position he held in a profession where social savoir-faire counts for so much. It speaks volumes for the tremendous driving force of the man that he had been able to overcome the innumerable obstacles of his own creating. But the more I saw of Malcolm, the more I liked him. There was that sterling sincerity about him, that utter goodwill and selflessness. I expect the first-class men in his profession appreciated him, but how the not-quite-first-class must have hated him. At the conclusion of the meal he pushed back his chair from the table. I must be going. If I settle down in that big chair of yours, I shall go to sleep and be here for the night. It wouldn't matter if you did, so far as I am concerned. It wouldn't matter so far as I am concerned, either, feeling about you like I do at the moment. You've tamed me, Miss Lefay. How are you feeling now? Utterly amiable, my dear, utterly amiable. A child could play with me. A he retired to the bathroom to collect his sodden rags, and reappeared looking outwardly presentable. He took my hand. Ayo, don't know what to say to you, ay, he said. Ayo, don't know what you've done to me, but you've helped me beyond anything I believed was humanly possible. A he looked at me for a moment, and then suddenly he dropped on his knees and put his head against me as he had done in my vision, and as I had done in my vision, I held him. Then he rose, and without a word, went out of the door. I watched him, striding away towards the river in the moonlight, looking like a giant refreshed. Ayo so much, ay, thought I, ay, for Isis in her Persephone aspect. A chapter 12. The next day being Monday, Malcolm had something to think about besides me and my magic, but in the quiet time between tea and the evening meal there came a knock at the door. And there he was. He stood before me and bared his head as if it were a ritual. I thought he was going down on his knees again, but he restrained himself, and followed me silently into my big room and sank into his usual chair beside the fire. He thrust his hand into his breast pocket and threw a bundle of papers into my lap. Ayo, there's your record, ay, he said, and lit a cigarette. I gathered the papers together and read. Ayo, when Miss LF proposed another experiment I felt no nervousness but sheer pleasure. When she told me she was going to make me a robe, I felt positively inebriated. Lost my head, in fact, for the moment. However, she left me alone to cool my heels and went to get dressed herself. By the time she was dressed, I had calmed down. Ayo, she made me stand at the altar and put my hands on it, and put hers there too. It affected me very much to see our two pairs of hands there, I don't know why. It seemed like a kind of union. I don't understand, but it meant a lot. Then she did plain, straightforward, common or garden hypnosis, and that was all there was to it. Ayo, when I woke up, however, I was in a state in which I have never seen a subject come round from hypnosis. At a guess, my temperature was 103 or 104. I broke immediately into a profuse perspiration, which gave relief, though there was extreme exhaustion, almost amounting to syncope, and my mind was confused as if in slight delirium. I did not know what I was doing or where I was. I can only offer apologies for my subsequent unceremonious behavior, But I really was not master of myself. Ayo, there was marked loss of sensory control of the lower limbs, the kinesthetic sense being definitely aberrant. It threw much light on the hysterical paralyzers and anesthesias, and was of great interest to me. Ayo recovered rapidly, however, when I forced myself to move about, and food and drink restored me not only to normal, but to supernormal. I felt magnificent, and still do, 3 a.m. But under all the vitality there is a profound peace and sense of relaxation, and so much happiness that if I had a voice, I would sing. Ayo, am deeply grateful to Miss LF for her patience with me and her kindness to me. R.A.M.A. Ayo A.R.A.M.A.T.M.A. said I, Ayo Aries, the Ram, of course you are. Did you get any sleep at all last night? Ayo got a bit. 2 bits, in fact. One as soon as I went to bed, and the other just as it was getting light. But I haven't felt my broken night at all. I felt fine all day, and still do. I have drunk of the secret well, Miss Le Fay. The water of life. Ayo, did you dream at all? I asked, for I knew from his words that the subconscious content was working through to the surface. Ayo, yes, I did dream, and my dream, and the conclusions I draw from it, are in the rest of those papers you've got. Read them and be done with it, and then you can say whether you mean to throw me out or not. You won't like them, but you stipulated I should be frank, and I have been. Now it's up to you. AI turned over the papers and he lit another cigarette. I saw that his hand was not quite steady. Knowing what Malcolm's hands were like, I began to wonder what those papers contained. Ayo, after leaving the house, I found myself in a very exhilarated condition, a bit above myself, in fact. An impulsive and ill-considered act on my part had met with a more tolerant reception than it deserved, and I was slightly inebriated in consequence. I walked home in this state, but as soon as I entered my own quarters my mood changed suddenly, and I realized I had done an exceedingly foolish thing, one that must never occur again. There was a sudden reaction, and I fell into a self-doubting mood, and became deeply unhappy. Ayo, knowing that I should not sleep, I acted on the advice of a colleague I had consulted, and took a sleeping tablet. This being ineffectual, I took another, and got into an unpleasant, nightmarish state between sleeping and waking, which I very much dislike. The drug I had taken prevented me from rousing myself, but did not induce complete unconsciousness, and I became very disturbed and apprehensive. Ayo, something seemed to tell me insistently that if I would call upon Miss LF I would be all right, but this I was unwilling to do, thinking it wiser not. Ayo struggled on in this state for some time, getting more and more desperate, but determined not to give in, when a man suddenly seemed to be standing beside my bed. I didn't see him, but I knew he was there, and I knew what he looked like. He was tall and thin, between 50 and 60 years of age, with a shaven, sunburned head, a hook nose, thin lips, grey eyes, and wore a long straight garment of white pleated cotton all linen with no sleeves. He had gold sandals on his feet, a gold collar round his neck, gold bracelets on his arms, and a gold band round his head. I knew at once that he was the chief priest whom I had worked under, and who had been the only man who had understood me or given me any sympathy. My confidence immediately returned, and I felt an enormous sense of relief. My sleep deepened, and I began to dream in good earnest. Ayo dreamt that I talked over my difficulties with this man, and what he told me amounted to this, that provided I did not mind being sacrificed in the end, everything would be all right. He said I was always to keep the end sacrifice in view, and I need not fear anything going wrong. He said I lacked faith. I said that I did not lack faith, nor did I fear any consequences to myself, but I did fear, and, not without reason, in my opinion, the consequences to other people of the imperfections in myself. He seemed to think that it did not matter, but I was unable to take that view. I asked for some sort of guarantee or promise, but he wouldn't give it. All he would say was, Ayo, it doesn't matter. Ayo, then he said a thing which seemed to change my whole outlook. I cannot tell why, but as soon as he said it, apprehension gave place to confidence.